to the old me, scared and unseen. You're the reason I built this dream. Now I speak so others thrive. Turn my scars into sound. I come alive from the ashes of the breakdown. I don't run, I rise, won't back down. This is keep it real, keep it purpose bound. Every word a step, every truth profound. We don't heal in silence, we fight with grace, softness and defiance, lighting up this place.
Welcome, welcome, welcome. This is Edna J. White, and I am an author, a writer. I am the editor-in-chief of Speak Magazine, and I'm also today's host on this great topic, and you are at the Wounded to Wonderful and Keeping It Real radio podcast. And this is the destination for real-life stories from real-life people who do real-life things. And today, our subject is going to be something that's really intimate, and I want you to be part of that undertaking. So, today's topic is going to be ending the deadly cycle of abuse and its myths. And I have two amazing people here today, and I hope I don't botch up their names like I normally do everything else, but it's okay. So, they're very forgiving and they're loving, and today's guest is R. Vassandra Nair and Janice Cummings, and we are going to be discussing this subject. So I would like them to introduce themselves. Vassandra, could you go first, please, and tell us about you and what you do?
Thank you so much for the opportunity. I'm really excited about this. To tell about myself, I am Vassandra Nair. I'm a senior research fellow under the University Grants Commission. I'm also a mental health clinician. I'm currently doing my PhD in the area of brain infections, which is to assess the different social factors that come into being when a person wants to seek treatment for brain infection. Whilst I also see my patients who have neurological concerns, along with mental health manifestations, who come to the institute that I belong to. It's called NIMHANS, National Institute of Mental Health and Neurosciences, which is based in Bangalore, India.
Okay.
Yeah.
Oh, nice. Bangalore, India. How is that? I got to go there. I got to be there. It sounds so great. I got to be there.
Yes.
How's the weather? Is it really hot?
No. It comes in the southern side. It's not very hot, it's not very cold, it's moderate.
Oh, I might like that. I think I might like that. I like an even temperature. Okay, welcome. I'm glad you're here today. And Janice Cummings, tell me about you.
Okay, thank you for having me.
You're welcome.
Such a pleasure to be here. I am the CEO and founder of You Win, Working With Me. And I am a relationship recycle coach.
Woo! I like that.
And you're probably wondering, what is that?
No, I like it.
What I do is I take my clients through the process of letting go of the old version of themselves so they can be transformed into something new.
Nice.
I assist women who have left their abusive relationships. And they're ready to acquire some practices and principles to make better choices and so that they don't wind up making the same mistake.
Okay.
And my background is with with women. I've worked with women for over 35 years in various capacities, mental health, domestic violence, incarcerated women, homeless women, families, and children. So I have a long, extensive history in human services.
Okay.
And my last job, I worked in the jail with pregnant moms, and I really, really, that was very rewarding because a lot of times when they had their babies, they were going to the foster care system. So one of my biggest accomplishments that I feel very proud of is that I helped reduce the number of children that were placed into foster care.
Nice.
By talking to a family member, bringing them to the hospital after she delivers, and coordinating that service. So that was one of my biggest accomplishments. And I just felt it was very rewarding working with the women that were pregnant because they can't see anybody. So I was pretty much the only person that they could see and that they could work with.
Mm-hmm.
And while I was there, I also worked with to ban the shackling of pregnant women during labor and delivery and to and from their doctor's appointments. So I was there for 11 years and I did that, and that was one of the most rewarding. I also worked as a program coordinator for a battered woman's shelter. So women, that's all I worked with. You know, and I had my own experience with domestic violence from the perspective of a child. So I have a good view of how the child feels, and that helps me support the mother and getting healed and hopefully not getting back into the same relationship she just came out.
Understood. So where are you located?
I am located in California, El Sobrante, California, East Bay. Yeah, so that's where I'm located at, but I'm originally from Oklahoma.
Okay.
I was born and raised in Oklahoma, but again, I just have a long history of supporting women, and I also was an infant massage instructor, so I taught parents the loving side of the massage, you know, because I was trying to figure out what angle I needed to come from. So I said, well, let me start with the baby, and then, you know, as usual, we always have to work mostly with the woman because she's usually the person that's responsible for everything.
Absolutely. So today we're going to be having this intimate conversation of being wounded in life, love, and relationships, and even sometimes in business, because all of that affects, you know, it works together. And it's wonderful when we can get together and find lessons when we are talking with one another. So we know that this is a serious topic, and of course, a lot of people have discussed it over time. And I think it's very important to talk about it now because of the pandemic and the amount of cases that have kind of changed because we were on lockdown. I know that physical abuse occurs every 20 minutes in the U.S., by an intimate partner. Every year, more than 10 million men and women experience emotional, verbal, sexual abuse, and even more. That's 1 in 3 women and 1 in 4 men. So today we're going to just talk about how the system, you know, we're going to start with, I guess we should start, like Janice said, is to start with the children. Let's start about, like, we're talking about the cycle. So the cycle, we want to start with the children. So if Vasandra, can you start and talk about, you know, the cycles, you know, what the effect of it, what effect is it on the children that you've seen or you've experienced or even that you know of?
So, during the pandemic period, the first initial work that we started off was with the helpline work because patients couldn't reach the hospitals, the OPDs, everything was shut down. And most of the times I remember the second day, the call that I got from a 12-year-old boy, and he called on the distress number in evening 5 p.m. and asked me this question, ma'am. I am so and so. I have a little sibling. My parents are here, but they are 24/7 work from home, so they are held up in their work. I have an 8-year-old younger sibling. Can you tell me how to keep him engaged? Because I have to do my work. At the same time, I have to take care of my sibling.
Wow.
I want help from the distress number for this. Out of all, I never expected that as a distress, you know, call to actually come in. And when the child actually asked me that, it made me think.
Right.
Children during the pandemic had different issues that came in. Their regular routine was disrupted. They were suddenly asked not to go outside. And they were trying to actually understand what is happening.
Yeah.
A lot of times, what was happening is that children were not involved in the communication part of it.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, as the elders, you know what is happening. You have made sense of it. But out of the fear, sometimes the way you're communicating the child is that, hey, this is it. So you do this because I want you to do that. Instead of that, if they would have just tried to give that child a logical explanation of that, hey, this is the reason why I'm asking you to do that.
Mm-hmm.
If you don't wear the mask, this is what's going to happen. If you step outside without the precautions,
right. What
will happen? That amount of, you know, decision making or just providing that knowledge was not actually going to the child.
Mm-hmm.
So a lot of behavioral issues associated. Suddenly, internet addiction was being reported. Their regular routine was disrupted. So, you know, they don't interact socially with anybody.
Right.
They're just isolated inside. Their parents are busy. Sometimes parents are not there. So these were the multitude of concerns that were being raised, or siblings finding it difficult how to engage themselves. So
right.
To break down and tell them activities that they can do within the house itself.
Wow. And it seems like it's a layer of things that you said, like the anti-socialism. Have you ever experienced something like, you know, that they became violent themselves, or was acting out, or was distressed? What have you seen as far as that?
So now I would say there are differences when you're seeing concerns from children,
right,
and concerns that you see from the adolescent and the young adults.
Right. Okay. Okay.
In terms of children, it was more like, I don't know what to do. I have a mobile phone, but how long do I do that? I watch TV, but how long I do it,
etc.
Those kind of issues.
Yes.
When it comes to adolescents, there was a lot of behavioral issues. And along with that, you know, they are growing. They want to meet their friends. And
oh, yes.
Everything stopped.
Yeah. Oh, yes.
I don't know. And when you have the, you know, and for adolescents, I remember very vividly one of the child who told me that this is new for me. I have never been 24/7 with my parents. I've never been 24/7, being monitored as to what am I doing, who
yes.
am I speaking. Now everything is held as questionable. Why is this? It's difficult for
right.
And then there were concerns from young adults who had either come from, like, you know, dysfunctional families,
mm-hmm.
where that became, they had been escaping from that for a very long period
right.
of time. And this has now become a reality for them. So
right.
they felt that their mental health concerns were, you know, precipitated again.
Yes.
There were relapses that we saw, and a lot of, like, telephonic therapy, which went for like 1 hour, 2 hour, just managing and calming and doing family systemic work, was something that all came as concerns at that time.
Yes. Now, Jeannie, just what Vasandra has said about the dysfunctionality, they used that as an escape. The children used, you know, they went to school. Now they didn't have that. Have you seen things like that? Like, you know, now they're seeing the, I guess, the devastation now really forefront with the dysfunctionality of the abuse in the home, that now that they can't get away from?
I think that they had, at least when they were getting out, they had a break.
Yes.
But now it's all the time, and it's probably intensified, too,
mm-hmm.
because tempers are flared. Close contact with each other. Everybody's kind of getting on each other's nerves. But one thing I do know about kids are kind of always been kind of forgotten when it comes to what's going on with the family. And at one point, it was like kids were seen and not heard.
Yeah.
So whatever went on, we didn't know anything about it anyway. And it was always a surprise. And it wasn't a good surprise all the time either.
Right.
So I think that even before this happened, they could have been paying just a little bit more attention to them anyway.
Mm-hmm.
You know? Because if they're not trying to make money, mm-hmm. you know, they have other issues. Like when abuse is in the household, of course, that takes precedent over the whole house.
Right.
I mean, nothing else matters, and everybody's trying to make this person comfortable so no explosion.
Right.
So I think they could have been doing it better all along, but now it's just more intensified.
Right. It is. And I think a lot of that, you know, I have a grandson and a granddaughter, and just seeing them go through this pandemic themselves, you know, my kids are older, you know, my kids are adults, and I know they're stressful about it, but, you know, just seeing how, you know, their main concern, like Vasandra said, is that they want to be out with their friends, you know, and what happened, you know, and they're just trying to conform with whatever's going on, but they are looked over. And one of the myths that Jeannie had said was kids should be seen and not heard. So that's like a myth. And we know that that's not really true, because with domestic abuse, any kind of abuse, children feel it and somehow make it their fault. Somehow, always, you know. How does the cycle with now we're saying we're talking about now we're past the children, we're to the adults. Let's talk about the power and control that happens with that dynamic with the two, you know, partners. Can we talk about that, Vasandra, a little bit? The power and control.
You mean between the couple?
Yes, the couple, yes.
Okay. You know, a 2 weeks down the line in the helpline,
mm-hmm.
the calls were predominantly for the abuse and the violence that was happening inside the house.
Okay.
I remember very clearly one person said that, you know, doors are shut. And where am I supposed to go?
Mm-hmm.
I make calls, but there is nobody who can come in and help me. Whatever happens, happens inside. And mm-hmm. I am in a position where I can't even voice out what my concerns are. By April 16th, I remember the number of calls were increasing and it had gone up to 240 plus.
Wow.
So, and it was getting really difficult. And that's when we had to like work across, get the chain of all the different helpline numbers that are there across the state such that we can help them across the country. It's not just across the state. Now, what happens between the power dynamics between the, you know, the two spouses is that,
mm-hmm.
let me talk from the, you know, the cultural background that I come in.
Okay.
I think that would make it much more sensible there.
Yes.
India per se is a little more patriarchal in nature.
Okay.
So it's been always that the male is the breadwinner,
mm-hmm.
while the female has been not always the breadwinner. It's not always a scenario. So she is more the nurturer, the emotional supporter. But actually, she's actually the one who's running the house,
uh-huh.
not by money, but by managing the roles, the requirements, everything. She has been doing that.
Okay.
When the husband came back into the picture, the husband actually again started being seated in the house. She started, as a woman, I would start working twice because I have to cook more. I have to do things more because now everyone is there inside the house. I already had my daily activities.
Wow.
Now that is again multiplied by two or three. And again, if I have set up certain structures inside the house, and I have made it because I did that for a long period of time,
mm-hmm.
worked well, it has established my equilibrium.
Right.
Now suddenly someone comes and questions me, and that happens to be the breadwinner of the house. Again, a power structure change that happens.
Yes.
Alcoholism That was the second concern. When you did not go outside, they started consuming it inside, where the government had to ban and shut down all the shops that provided it, because the induced cycle of violence started increasing really high. So the dynamics kept going up, down, up, down.
Right.
And they were not able to actually establish the balance in even the most stable, you know, non-abusive scenario.
Right.
The male found it really difficult to understand that why things are in this manner. He would start questioning, hey, why do you keep this particular container here? Why is that
right.
You tell the child to do in this manner? Because they have not been really involved in that.
Right.
Thought.
Yes.
And now,
makes
and
sense.
Now
yeah, makes sense.
She's supposed to answer everything.
Mm-hmm.
So she gives answer once. She gives answer twice. And third time, she's like, hey, you were not there. And now you come and ask these questions. It's too much for me. You
right.
are in the house. I have to do cooking. I have to do double the amount of like cleaning. And now you're asking questions on that. So all of these were like, you know,
right.
it, that came in.
Yeah, I can see that. That makes, I mean, total sense. It really does. I mean, nitpicking almost. That's what I would call it. But like, you know, oh, why is the juice there? And shouldn't it be in the refrigerator? And you're the one kind of doing it all the time. That makes so much sense, Sandra. What about you, Jeannie? What have you seen as far as the power control issue?
Well, I think, I don't think people really knew each other, because everybody was going their own separate ways, right? And,
right.
And I think that with this closeness, it intensified the you having to do more work, as she just mentioned.
Yes, absolutely.
Your whole schedule, and that's causing more stress on the woman. And if she's in a really abusive relationship, that could also be physical as
right.
well.
Right.
Yeah. And then the kids are there, so they're having to tiptoe around as well. So there's definitely a lot of stress that's being put more on the family structure
mm-hmm.
as a result of everybody seeing each other too much.
Right.
In a way.
Yeah.
In a way. Yeah.
Yeah, it kind of, I know for myself, and I live alone, I was getting on my own nerves, you know, I was getting on my own nerves, and then I was working from home in addition to being home, so it was like double, like the work, like Vassandra said, like the double the work, it was like, holy my goodness, like I got all this stuff like from the office here, which normally is not supposed to be there, and I'm freaking out about that, so I have to do double the work to clean up after working, and then come home, and I didn't even have to come home, I'm home already, you know, and I have to do the additional work. So you're right, it's just like, it really is a compound issue, you know, it really is compound, and it's very layered. And additionally, like you said, with Jeannie, like you said, we really sometimes don't know ourselves, you get to know yourself if you're alone, but you really do, you know, but you don't know your partner as well as you thought you did, or appreciated them as well as you thought you did, which makes a big impact. And then you start intimidating with moving the cup from here to there, you know, or not having the fruit in the refrigerator, put it on the sink instead when you've been doing like that for years. And then it becomes emotional. You know, that becomes, now you're emotional now. Now the anger starts setting in. So can we talk about that, about, you know, how the emotional part starts to envelop in this whole dynamic of the cycle?
Okay, I can talk a little bit about it.
Okay.
Well... Number one, the emotional starts setting in, like you say, the nitpicking starts,
mm-hmm.
and then it may turn into the name calling, and it may be put downs, and again, noticeable because you're in it more.
Yeah.
But it probably already was there in some cases.
Okay.
You know, but a lot of people that are in those kind of situations, they make excuses for the behavior, like the person's stressed out, so, you know.
Right.
But what happens to the individual that's dealing with the emotional stress, their body begins to tear down because they're holding in all that pressure and that stress. Mm-hmm. And it's really not good for their health. And unfortunately, sometimes that anger is taken out on the kids. You know, every little bitty thing they do, they're being centered, or, you know, it's being pinpointed, just like she mentioned about pinpointing in terms of the extra work, the extra questions and things. And that's probably, that's one of the reasons why I do what I do, because I want mothers to realize that a lot of their decisions and the choices they make definitely hurt the child in the long run. You know, some of these things were already there, they just didn't see them.
For Sandra?
That's me, my perspective.
Right. For Sandra?
Adding on to what she said, there is something called as the human function curve. Mm-hmm. And that kind of like puts in everything what all of us have been saying about it. So, you know, what this person called Hans Lee had said about it is that there is something called as good stress and something called as distress.
Yes.
And this pandemic clearly, you know, demarcated that division. So what he says is that you have like a tension that builds up, you know, the small things in the house, one day, once in a week, etc., etc. One day I displace it on my children, one day it comes on the partner, etc. Now I would be like, okay, one day, 2 days, I will take it. But this keeps on accumulating. And when it keeps on accumulating, there is this stage where there is a hump that is created. The peakedness comes in. Now, that is the period when the comfort level has been reached. Now, that's when the peakedness comes in. So, you have moved from the good stress. And now you're actually moving towards the distress. And at that time is when I, my stress level is so high, internal, external reason, that I will start getting angry. And because of that, there is fatigueness. I am exhausted by what is happening. I come to this position that, you know what, I am exhausted with the situation. But my health starts getting affected. So ill health, and that eventually leads to a breakdown. And that is exactly how this
whole picture goes in. Whole cycle goes. Now, we have about 10 minutes. And I know we've covered a lot. We've covered a lot and we've put it all together. I want to, in your expert opinions, because you all are experts, give us some steps. Give us, you know, maybe three steps. You know, one step, two step, three steps. How can we begin to kind of heal that or begin to move forward and break that cycle for, you know, for, first for, you know, the woman or the man who is the is being abused, and then for the abuser, and maybe for the children. Let's see how we can bring that together. Sandra, would you like to begin?
So, three major things, for three different levels of things that, you know, happen depending on the severity of the situation. If it's in a milder level, I would say the first step is communication. The first thing is I voice out my opinion saying that, hey, this is not okay. Hey, I'm finding it difficult. I need, this is not just one person's work. Let's share. And I am not okay with this behavior, and this is the limit. If that is for milder level, but if that continues as a pattern, I would say the second thing is that you voice out. Reach out to the individuals who can provide the care. There has to be legal aid services that are available, and you are in touch with the clinicians and the healthcare supporters who can provide you with the necessary support. In the third level, I would say it would be more of like increasing the awareness of the people who live around, of the community that you belong to, such that, you know, reporting happens. Under-reporting is so high. Most of the people don't even come to know about it. Let individuals know that, hey, this is the problem. This is not a normal thing.
Just good.
Because you are in a relationship doesn't mean that this is allowed.
Very good. That's so good. That's tweetable, guys. That's a tweetable right there, she just said. Let everybody know in the community. Say that third one again. That's very important. I think we don't do that enough. What is the third one again?
Increase the awareness. Let people know about it.
Yes.
No more underreporting.
Yes.
No more saying yes to the things that you are not okay with.
Yes. Very good. Thank you so much, Cassandra. And Janice, what could you say? I was going to call you Jeannie.
I think the first step is not romanticizing about the relationship. And I feel this way because I'm feeling this.
Mm-hmm.
You know, instead of romanticizing it, just see it for what it is.
Right.
You know,
be clear.
That's the first step. And the second step is if you've decided to make a move, start planning it.
Mm-hmm.
Start making your plans, start getting your money together, start doing what you need to do. Because some relationships can be worked out and some of them can't. And the biggest thing is feel your body. Your body will tell you whether this is wearing you down or killing your soul. Because you'll find that your soul will be depleted once you've given everything that you have.
That's very
There's
good.
Nothing left for you.
Very good. Just
pay attention to what's going on. Be in the game.
Don't
be on the sidelines no more.
That's very good. Very good. Ladies, I think you all have covered it. I think that you have made this exciting. And I know it's a sensitive topic, and I know it's a serious topic, but I think you've made it exciting that we now have some solutions and we can have this conversation. We have two tweetables, so I really want to tweet that today. And I'm so glad that you all are here today, Cassandra, Jeannie, Janice, I want to call you Jeannie, but Janice. And I'm so excited that you guys are here. I'm definitely going to have you back because there's more to talk about. I mean, this round table can get really round. It's really a good subject. Thank you so much for being here today. This is Edna J. White, Cassandra Nair, and Janice Cummings signing off. Thanks so much, guys.
Thank you. Bye-bye.
The holidays are about giving something truly special. I'm Martha Stewart, and I believe the best gifts aren't just beautiful, they're useful every single day. Lennox has brought timeless beauty and lasting quality to our tables for generations, and their Lennox Spice Village is the perfect holiday gift for someone you love or for yourself. It's more than a spice rack. It's a charming collection of hand-painted houses that turn ordinary spices into extraordinary experiences. Imagine cinnamon from a tiny Victorian cottage, or oregano from a pastel townhouse. Suddenly, a simple meal becomes a moment to savor. Because spices can be more than ingredients. They can inspire memories, warmth, and joy all year long. Give a gift that lasts beyond the holidays. Discover the collection at lennox.com/spicevillage.
If you're a podcast host, listen up, this one's for you. My name is Allie Jackson. I'm the host of Finding Mr. Height, a dating and relationship podcast that I've been doing for 4 years now, sharing my positive and practical approach to dating that's built on my own life experience. And I wanted to share another experience that I've had, my secret behind monetizing my show. It's called Red Circle. And I was just telling my colleague about how much I love their platform. With Red Circle, not only am I getting a seamless hosting experience, but I also love the support I receive in ad sales. It's not just typical ad sales either. It's targeted targeted opportunities based on my show and my life. And the platform is super simple. You just set your preferences and Red Circle matches you with sponsors that align with your show. You can vet every opportunity and their platform gives you great analytics. More recently too, my Red Circle team has brought me opportunities outside of my podcast on social media to really augment the podcast partnerships, bring them full circle. I just can't recommend them enough. If you want to give it a try, go to redcircle.com to get your free trial. That's redcircle.com for a free trial.